From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It's time. As voters cast ballots today, Michigan's clerks have started counting a tidal wave of absentee ballots.
I hope to get out by midnight or 1 o'clock, but I wouldn't be surprised if I don't meet that goal.
We have stories for you about voter turnout, tabulation, and what makes a teenager want to work a 13-hour day at the polls. Also, the federal government says health officials should have the capacity to test 1 million people for COVID-19, but only several dozen have been tested in Michigan's state labs so far. We're speaking this hour with the state's chief medical officer about coronavirus capacity.
What we don't want, though, is everyone to think that they need to go to an emergency department, for example, if they think they might have symptoms.
Also, the political pioneer who gave Michigan's civil rights law its name. Those stories and more coming up. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. It's primary election day in Michigan. Have you voted yet? If not, there's still time. Polls close at 8 p.m. A little bit later this hour, we're going to touch base with some local clerks about how their day is going, how same-day voting registration and absentee ballot counting is playing out. Also, we'll check with a couple of teenage polling volunteers.
Like, some people don't think that one vote may make a difference, but it will. You'd be surprised.
Stay with us. That's coming up. But first, so much going on today. Obviously, the Democratic presidential primary is drawing turnout in some areas, but there are also voters in several counties with important tax issues on the ballot, school issues, continued millage for the Detroit Institute of Arts, and more. And this day is a test for Michigan's election systems. For cities and counties, this is the first time that election reforms are in place. Voters can register online at their polling station today. And as we mentioned, Michiganders have been able to request paper absentee ballots on demand for any reason. Ballots they can even fill out at their clerk's offices if their registration is in good standing. With us to talk about everything that's happening is Chris Thomas, former elections director for the state of Michigan. Mr. Thomas, welcome.
Oh, thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Given everything that's in play today, more absentee ballots, people registering in person, how challenging does today look for you compared with average elections in years past?
Well, anytime you have major new election processes, there is a challenge. And so there's going to be some hiccups today. They're not going to be large because the real change today is at the clerk's office. So the precincts are running just like they have always run. And when the increased number of absentee voters means there's fewer people coming to the polling place. So they actually may have a little easier of a day.
At the same time, that pile of ballots, absentee ballots stacking up is not small in many places.
No, it's not. And I'm sure at 7 o'clock this morning when the bell rang, they all dove into their absentee ballots. And what it's appearing is that the number of absentee ballots appears to be very close to what a November general election has been. A little over a million, 1.1 to 1.2 is what's typical. And I know as of this weekend, they were at about 900,000. So given the activity of the last day, they're probably well over a million now. So it's really about what you would see in a November election, not a primary. Now, the place that is going to experience some real change are the city and township clerk offices.
If you were a clerk, where would you be focusing your efforts today?
I would be looking at my office because that is the place that people can go who are not registered and register to vote and vote an absentee ballot. And so we've got a little over 1,520 city and townships across the state, and they are registering voters today and issuing ballots to them, first time in this state.
The State Elections Division acknowledged this winter that counties and clerks were in need of more modems and more powerful modems to report their results this year. What can you tell us about how data transmission has played a role in past years?
Well, in past years, it's been hit or miss in terms of which counties use modems. There are modems in the tabulators. They're not activated during the polling hours. They can't be activated until the machine's turned off and the election is ended. They can then be activated and they can transmit the totals up to the county clerk's office, and that's where the numbers are accumulated.
I mean, is that within the system? Obviously, as outsiders, we don't really see a lot of this personally unless you sign up to go be an observer. Has that traditionally been a bottleneck point?
No, it's just that each polling place takes some time to close down. So your polls close at 8 o'clock. It's going to take them a half hour to an hour, if everything goes well, before they're ready to modem those. And then when they come into the county, they've got to be fed into the county's vote accumulation software. So that works very nicely. And you can find on the Secretary of State's website, you can find a link to all the city or all the county clerks' websites so people can follow that. Now, it takes a while before it'll be on the Secretary of State's website.
Right. Is it realistic to think that we might just go back to calling in results?
No, I don't think so. I think that is probably very error prone. Because if you're calling them in, somebody's writing them down, and somebody's going to transpose or not hear properly what the number was. So I doubt that'll happen. Now, in a presidential primary, you would say, well, that's possible. There aren't that many candidates now. In a general election where we have a 22-inch ballot, you're not going to be able to call those in.
Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson has been saying in op-eds and public statements that people just need to be ready to exercise some patience, that results may not be ready until well into the day tomorrow. Does that sound about right to you?
Well, I think they'll surprise folks. They'll have them, it may be 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, and then there may be a handful of counties that are out. And it doesn't mean that you won't see any results from those counties. It would just be some of the absentee counting boards. So it's not like nobody's going to be able to determine what the status is. Where it's really going to be an issue is in November, because vote by mail catches on. People find the convenience of it. They're talking about an 80% increase. If that happens in November, that may push us up to 40-50% of the votes being by mail, maybe more, depending on what the virus of the time is. That's a whole other issue that election officials will be looking at. And we're pretty fortunate here to kind of come in under the wire. I mean, some states down the road from us, when their primaries are held in the next couple of weeks,
through April and May,
they may be facing a very different situation.
I don't envy them. You were a supporter of many of the reforms that the state is road testing today. And I think we can safely say, given the demand for absentee ballots, that they're pretty popular with
Absolutely.
The public. However, the clerks have been asking the state legislature, we need time to prepare the ballots for tabulation. They would like, in the run-up to the November election, to just have a little bit more leeway to get things ready for the actual count. Do you consider that further action needs to be taken?
Absolutely. It's a very reasonable request. States across the country process before Election Day. Just go south to Ohio. They process for 17 days before the election. They are opening envelopes, taking ballots out, putting them in the tabulator. Now, those results are never run. They can't be run till Election Day. But that happens in Illinois, happens in Minnesota, probably happens in well over half the states. If that doesn't occur here in Michigan, then you will be sometime over your dinner on Wednesday or maybe breakfast on Thursday getting your final results.
Senator Mike Shirky has said that he is open to the discussion, but was not. It didn't seem like he was super in much of a huge hurry to accommodate the clerk's request about this. Have you been involved in any of those conversations in Lansing?
I've talked with the bureau and the secretary's office, and I've talked with a number of clerks around the state on it, and I've done a little bit of research in terms of what other states are doing. What I think really needs to be done is that legislators need to look at voting systems. They actually need to see how they're secured. I mean, it's a knee-jerk reaction in a state like Michigan that's never done anything but process on Election Day to think, oh, ballots are going to be open and they're going to be all over the place and someone might see the results. There are ways to prevent that, and you have to see that with the operation of the voting system. And I think that would engender some confidence.
What's the trend been over the past few years for turnout in Michigan? It sounds like there are more people engaging in democracy.
We are on an upward, spiraling upward, which is a great thing. 2008 with Obama's election was our high part, over 5 million, just a hair over 5 million. And then it's gone, leveled out at 4.8 or so, same in 16. And then all of a sudden in 18, the primary, just the regular August primary, we saw this huge spurt in voting. Places ran out of ballots, which is very unusual. Then in November, here we had 4.3 million people showed up in a gubernatorial election when typically 3.2. So a million more showed up. And I think this is going to track through to today, and it will definitely track into November.
We just have a few seconds left. What does Michigan have to do to get ready for November?
We have to figure out how to handle those absentee ballots, and we have to figure out in college towns, university towns, exactly how to handle Election Day registration on a massive. I was at the city clerk's office today, lines with 130.
In Ann Arbor?
Yes.
Yeah.
130 students in line.
Wow.
All very well behaved, having a very good time. Speaking to patients, they show great patience. But it was a joyful thing to see people who normally could not have voted had they waited this long.
Chris Thomas, former elections director for the state of Michigan, thank you so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Coming up, Michigan's chief medical officer talks about coronavirus testing and preparedness.
We now have 7-day-a-week operations as far as running those samples. But outside of our state lab, private labs are doing the testing as well.
That's just around the corner on Stateside. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We still do not know that there are any confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Michigan. However, when you ask health providers about that, they're quick to say there might be. We just haven't found them yet. A supply of new coronavirus test kits has been extremely short. Last week, Vice President Mike Pence announced the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was getting ready to ship testing materials for as many as 1 million people over the weekend. Dr. Janae Khaldun is Michigan's chief medical officer. Dr. Khaldun, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me again.
Has Michigan received a sizable shipment of COVID-19 tests from the CDC yet?
Yes, our state laboratory has for several weeks actually been preparing to be able to perform the COVID-19 test. We did receive our initial testing kit, and then last week we received two additional kits. So the message right now to all of our medical providers is if someone comes to you and you think they meet criteria and they need to be tested, you should work with your local health department to get that testing done. We can provide that in our state lab, but also there are private labs who have already come on board with being able to perform this test. So we do not want people to think today that they cannot get this test if it is necessary.
How many people have been tested in Michigan so far?
We've tested over 50 people here in the state of Michigan at our state laboratory. But I think what's important to mention is we now know that there are other private labs, LabCorp, who are actually providing this test. So a provider does not necessarily have to go to our state lab to do this test. I don't have full insight into what those private laboratories are doing right now. We are working on that system. But as of today, at our state lab, we've tested dozens of people. They're coming in every day. We now have 7-day-a-week operations as far as running those samples. But outside of our state lab, private labs are doing the testing as well.
When we hear that the number of people who have been tested is in the dozens and that the number of people who may be at risk could be in the thousands and that people who are medically fragile might be in the tens of thousands, I mean, how in the world, how are the labs going to be able to perform enough tests to really get the upper hand on the outbreak?
You're right, April. As this continues, it is actually a concern that we all have as far as long-term, we'll be able to do enough tests for individuals. But right now, we are not saying, based on what we've seen in our lab, our test results, we have not seen one confirmed case. We do not have broad community spread that we know of. And so right now we have a supply, but absolutely that could change. And then we will be looking to not just our state lab, but our private laboratories to be able to take on that capacity.
Do you expect that the CDC is going to send out more materials?
My understanding, and again, I can't speak for the CDC, but my understanding is that if we request additional testing kits, that they will provide them for us. And that did happen last week. We requested kits, and we did receive kits. So as of today, I do not have a supply challenge, but you are absolutely right. As the days go on, and certainly if we see more cases and therefore more people are certain to be at risk and we need more tests, that is something that I hope that the CDC and FDA are working very hard on as far as testing capability.
In states that have confirmed cases of COVID-19, there are a lot of people who've had trouble getting through to their doctor's offices. I mean, phone lines are just jammed. Is there any way that institutions can deal with the tidal wave of people asking if they need to be assessed?
That's a great point. Yes, we are working with our healthcare providers, with our hospitals, making sure they are doing the appropriate screenings, making sure they know that patients may be coming to them. What we don't want, though, is everyone to think that they need to go to an emergency department, for example, if they think they might have symptoms. They need to call their providers, potentially call their local health departments to see what was needed. And we are actively working on expanding capacity, both at the state and the local level, to be able to manage those calls and requests for information.
So in the last 24 hours, a couple of major institutions have canceled in-person classes for the year. Harvard University, Ohio State ended face-to-face instruction last night, just telling students that they need to not come to class. How far are we from seeing disruption on that scale for places of work and schools in Michigan, do you think?
So those are important strategies when it comes to community mitigation. And specifically, as you dial up your strategies and when you are seeing spread in the community of the disease, like many of those areas where you mentioned those universities are, absolutely, those are things that you should consider and implement. We are not there in Michigan right now, today. But again, if I find that there are positive cases, if we are having community spread, then absolutely those are things that we should be implementing and considering. And we are working very closely, actually, with our school and university partners to make sure they have the information that they need, and we are supporting them as necessary at the state level.
Hmm. What needs to happen to make sure that Michigan's hospitals are not overwhelmed in the event of a large-scale outbreak?
Well, again, we've been working with hospitals for several weeks now, healthcare providers for over a month, making sure they're prepared, making sure they're thinking about what their emergency preparedness plans are, who's going to be able to work, and what they need to do if employees need to stay home.
Are there a series of procedures that hospitals need to devise in terms of finding more available beds at remote locations or drafting additional staff?
Yes, that would be something that every hospital CEO should be thinking about right now, absolutely.
What's the state's responsibility to make sure that the plans hospitals have in place are durable?
So we've been working with all of our healthcare providers to make sure they have the information that they need. We're also working with our licensing and regulatory agency, LARA, to make sure we're supporting our providers to the best we can. And we're also looking at supplies. So if our hospitals were to have shortages of any gowns or gloves or masks, we want to make sure at this stage we understand what that need may be. And if we need to request additional funding to support them, we will do that.
Michigan's chief medical officer is Dr. Janae Khaldun. Dr. Khaldun, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's time once again for a state history lesson with our partners at the Michigan History Center. Many Michiganders have heard of the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. As a matter of fact, a petition drive is underway this year that would expand the act's protections to include the LGBTQ community. But many of us don't know the people behind those names. Just who is Daisy Elliott? Jillian Reese is a curator of exhibits at the Michigan History Center, and she's with us now. Hey, Jillian, welcome to Stateside.
Hello.
So where was Daisy Elliott from?
She was originally born in West Virginia in 1917.
Do we know why she came to Michigan?
She was looking for economic opportunities. Her father was a coal miner, and her mother was a homemaker. So in many ways, they were sort of the next generation of folks that were not only looking for economic freedom in the North, but also social freedom. This was the time of Jim Crow, when Black folks in the South really didn't have freedom of movement or freedom of political expression. So they looked at the North as sort of this promised land where they could get good jobs, you know, have more freedom. Now, that wasn't always the case. Racism existed everywhere in the United States. They had more freedom than they did in the South. But I'm sure that those experiences in the South and then later in Michigan really inspired Daisy. She was one of these women that after she turned 40, she decided, I want to get more involved in sort of improving the life of women and African Americans in Michigan.
And how did she do that?
Well, she ran for public office. I have been studying a lot about Daisy Elliott, and one of the things that strikes me most about her is, you know, in the last 2018 midterm election, the conversation was really about women getting involved in political life, many of them for the first time and many of them later, sort of spurred on by what they wanted to see in the world and the change they wanted to make. And Daisy Elliott, in many ways, is a foremother of this movement. In 1960, Michigan voters voted to approve a constitutional convention, of which they had to then elect delegates. And Daisy Elliott was a delegate elected from Detroit. It's particularly interesting, the 61-62 Con-Con, that this was the first constitutional convention in Michigan's history where all the delegates weren't white men. We had women delegates and African-American delegates. So it was a very important constitution because for the first time, we were really going to hear a diversity of voices with regards to gender and race.
Daisy Elliott's name would have been important to Michigan's story no matter what. But how did she come to be part of such an important civil rights bill that stays with us to this day?
Yeah, after her experience at ConCon, Daisy Elliott joined other ConCon alums to run for public office in their local communities. And she became a representative in the Michigan House. Right away, she set to representing the needs and improving the lives of women and African Americans throughout the state. She almost immediately knew that she wanted to try and pass legislation that was modeled on the 1964 Civil Rights Act that had passed federally. And it took her almost 10 years to find someone, specifically a Republican. She wanted it to be a bipartisan piece of legislation and find someone who was willing to co-sponsor that with her. She saw during this time busing, the Detroit riots, racial inequality, sort of the fallout of those things. And she really thought that it was very important for Michigan to have some sort of law on the books that would protect the civil rights of Michiganders.
So the person that she found was Republican Melvin Larson.
Yes.
How did she sell him on being a part of this?
Well, it wasn't too hard of a sell. Mel was sort of a product of his time period. He was much younger than Daisy Elliott. He sort of saw her. He served on the Civil Rights Committee with her and saw her as a leader on that committee. But he also personally had been touched by some of these issues. While working in Pontiac as a teacher, he saw the racial tensions and inequity that had sprung up around busing in that city. And so when he was approached by Daisy, he sort of said, okay, I'll sign up. And in fact, many people within his own Republican caucus warned him against co-sponsoring this piece of legislation. They told him that it would be political suicide. And Mel has talked a lot since then about how he would have probably been sort of this no-name legislator if it wasn't for Daisy Elliott sort of reaching beyond the aisle and allowing him to become famous and an important part of Michigan history.
It's become such a commonly known piece of Michigan history now, but did they have a hard time getting it passed?
It took them quite a few years. I think it was 4 years from the time that Mel signed on as co-sponsor to getting it passed. But I think, you know, during this time period of the 60s and 70s, across the country, there was an incredible sense that people needed to work in a bipartisan fashion to address some of the issues that were being highlighted by the civil rights movement and by the women's liberation movement. And so, you know, there was this sense that Michigan needed to keep its identity as a modern state. A lot of the legislators at this time really saw Michigan as a leader nationally. And it was also a time where Democrats controlled the Michigan state government. And so they were able to get some of this legislation through that today we might think would be very difficult to get through, considering sort of the more partisan nature of our politics.
How did Daisy Elliott's gifts manifest themselves during this time?
She was really known as a very hard worker. We have a quite charming political brochure of hers in our collection. And in it, she's telling people what she has to do every day as a legislator and making that work known, and included meeting with folks, speaking with constituents. She was always known as being there, being someone that people could count on. But she was also friendly to Republicans. She was someone who saw the need to really compromise and to reach across the aisle and bring people in that maybe you would think would be unlikely to support things like civil rights acts. But in actuality, I think most folks who run for public office are just trying to improve the lives of Michigan residents. So with knowing that she was someone who sort of wasn't like a shifty character, she was someone that you could really trust, I think was a great factor in her success.
It might be easy to say that the Elliott Larson Act might have just been a product of its times and needed to happen. But do you think that it really could have happened without Daisy Elliott at the helm?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, Mel Larson has talked about this quite a bit, and he said that if it wasn't for her and for her determination, I mean, she was elected in 63, and, you know, the Elliott Larson Act didn't pass until the late 1970s. So, you know, it took her a decade and a half to get this through. Not many people have that sort of persistence. I think the other thing to think about with regards to the Elliott Larson Act is that it's not only barring discrimination on the case of race, sex, religion, national origin, age, marital status. It also gives folks a place to air their grievances so that, you know, they can go report this. And also, it provides a framework for compensating victims of discrimination. Without some teeth to legislation for it to be enforced, it can really just be almost like a gesture to say, okay, we don't want discrimination in this state, but without some sort of enforcement of a law, it doesn't go very far to impact people's lives.
Jillian, thank you so much for talking with us a little bit about Daisy Elliott. She sounds like an amazing person.
Yes, she's quite inspirational, and we're very lucky to have had her serve the state.
Jillian Reese is curator of exhibits at the Michigan History Center. You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. It's primary election day. Let's see what's going on in a couple of city clerks' areas around the state.
Okay. Hello. My name is Chris Swope. I'm the city clerk of Lansing.
Thanks for being with us today, Chris.
Glad to be here.
How's it looking? Did you get many absentee votes in the run-up to today?
Yes, we got well over double what we had 4 years ago. In 2016, we had 5,000 absentee votes. And this year, we've issued about 11,700, so quite an increase.
Have a lot of people who requested the ballots been returning them relative to how that's worked in the past?
Yes, we still have quite a few to come in, but we haven't seen today's mail. As of yesterday, we still had about 1,700 ballots left to be returned. Hard to predict exactly how many of those we will get back, but we know we'll get several hundred at least.
The process of tabulating absentee ballots is different than the way in-person votes are counted. How much more staff did you need to do both?
We added several people we've always had an absent voter counting board, but in the past year, we've increased the number, so we've got about a dozen more than we used to have for this election. Looking forward to November, we're going to need even more.
What are you looking for today that might inform the things you'll need to do in November?
Well, one of the things we need to figure out is whether to add a whole nother scanning station, which we believe we need. And then we also have a second computer where you adjudicate things like a voter who made a mark that the machine doesn't know if it's a valid vote or not because it's not quite filled in very much. So we have a computer where we can review those and trying to determine, you know, whether we need to have two of those or whether we can have two scanners and one adjudication station or two of both. So that's one of the assessments we're trying to figure out, although the problem is with a short ballot with not many offices on it, it's not giving us enough data.
Given the new things that are in play this time around, from registering to vote in person to the increased number of absentee ballots, can you give us a sense of how much extra work or how much more difficult this primary is to administrate, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say it's about a 7 in terms of increased complication and workload. You know, we with the voters coming in to vote on election day, register and vote on election day in our office, that's adding a lot to our workload. And then we will have to include those in the absent voters as well. It's just a lot more complex from beginning to end.
Are a lot of your poll workers returning workers?
Oh, yes. Most of them, almost all of them are. And we have a great team of people who are faithful to this process. There's always a need for new people, though.
How's the experience been for them trying to put some new procedures into work?
They're pretty open to change. They appreciate the fact that voters have a lot of options. Sometimes it's a little complex to explain all of the options to the voters, but they're handling it very well.
How late do you expect to be working this evening?
Oh, I hope to get out by midnight or 1 o'clock, but I wouldn't be surprised if I don't meet that goal.
Good luck tonight.
Thank you.
Let us know if you need additional stores of coffee.
Okay, will do.
Chris Swope is city clerk for Lansing. Next up is Joel Hondorp, the Grand Rapids city clerk. Joel, how is turnout looking today?
Going in today, we've issued over 16,000 absentee ballots. We had municipal elections last year, so we're kind of used to this absentee turnout. Other communities obviously haven't. So we had a little bit of insight of how this was going to go. We're seeing precincts anywhere from, 100 to 200 voters so far. So we're monitoring it, watching it. So it looks like a normal election for us.
Based on your experience with city elections last time around, what was your plan today for opening the absentee ballots and tabulating?
Well, we're doing exactly what we did last November. And then we added, so we have, in November, we had 2 high-speed tabulators. This year, we have 3 high-speed tabulators.
So it sounds like you've got it down to a science at this point.
We're getting it down to an art.
It's kind of
hard to get to a science.
Yeah. Does there need to be any additional staff outlay?
It's not so much the absentees that get us. It's now same-day registrations, and that's what it takes up a lot of time that takes people off phones and other things as they do a same-day registration and then have them vote absentee as well.
Have a lot of people been trying to take advantage of that in Grand Rapids this year?
Yeah, it's been real steady over the last week or so, ever since the 14-day deadline, but it's been really busy over the last few days.
Tell me what you'll be paying attention to as the tabulation continues today and as you think of things that you might need to get ready for the general election in November.
Well, I think we're seeing what we need for frontline staff and for able to take calls for precincts. The presidential primary is always a little bit more of an enigma and a different kind of election because you don't know exactly how many Republicans, how many Democrats are going to show up or choose those ballot styles. So it's different every 4 years. So I'm trying to gauge of what the turnout and what people are excited about. And then, of course, Michigan's primary doesn't always stay in the same place. It did 4 years ago, but we've been in late February. We've been as late as late March, so it's kind of hard to tell. Plus, a lot of your seasoned workers are snowbirds.
Right. Is there anything that we can observe of ballot preference? Like, I don't know, maybe Republicans prefer absentee and Democrats prefer to vote in person?
No, I don't think we can judge any of that. It's so hard to do because we're giving out Democratic ballots doesn't mean those are Democrats voting. Same vice versa. That 4 years ago, or other elections. So just because someone gets a Republican ballot doesn't mean they're necessarily a Republican or vice versa.
Anything else that you've observed today as the voting began this morning and over the lunch hour?
I think the only thing is this election is different because people have to choose a Republican or a Democratic ballot. And it's frustrating for voters because, they don't want to have that expressed out loud or anything in writing expressing that. And so just getting them to know that they're just making a preference for this ballot and it doesn't register them for a party.
What are you telling people who still have questions about the process?
Yeah, we like to guide people to michigan.gov/vote so they can see where their polling location is. They can see a sample ballot on that location. They can also see a map of where their precinct is.
Just before we let you go, what's your best guess about when results might be ready?
Well, we have equipment that has cell phone modems. So as soon as they close a tabulator at a precinct, they run the totals tapes and then they plug in a modem and that modems the results to the county and the city.
So pretty quickly after the polls close tonight, you think?
It can be for the precinct. I'm not sure on absentees, but precinct ballots are usually showing up about 8:20, 8:30.
Joel, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Joel Hondorp is the city clerk in Grand Rapids. We have one more stop to make today in Bloomfield Township and clerk Jan Ronselli. She told us it's not just the precincts that are busy today. It's the clerk's office, too.
We have been registering people to vote over the counter all day. And that's kind of exciting. They're first-time voters, and they're all ages, all ages. They just haven't, they've just moved here, or they've been here, and they haven't registered yet, but they're voting absentee over-the-counter. And, of course, that's allowed when they register to vote on Election Day. This way they come here, they show us proof of residency, we register them, then we issue them a ballot and they vote it right here and they're good to go, and however they want to vote the next time, whether they go to the polls or absentee, they're good. And they're not in the hustle and bustle of the precinct and where you have to hold up the line to put them in the unlisted category there. No, because they don't come up on the computer because they're not registered.
Do you know how many absentee ballots have been cast so far for the township?
We issued, as of last night, like 7,900, and that was just an absentee. The first batch we brought in was 6,200 into the absentee room, and we have a second batch going in shortly. So, and then the lines are steady at all my precincts. So there are still people who love going to the polls, and that's where they want to be. And that's an exciting thing, too. You know, it's a social occasion, and it's democracy at its height.
Did you decide to hire any extra staff to handle this?
For the AVs, yes. I have a very large part-time absentee staff. I have one person, she's full-time during the elections, and then we have four other people who come in part-time to assist her. But we've had to spend numerous hours here. I'm going to tell you, particularly all the people who came in who had a Democratic ballot and wanted to spoil it because of their candidate being out of the race, we probably did over 500 of those, or about 500.
We've talked to you before about the fears among many city and county clerks in Michigan that this year's tabulation was just going to be a really, really uphill battle. How would you say things are going as of right now?
We are climbing the uphill battle right now, and it's a slow rise because our number, we have 50% more absentee ballots than we did at this time in 2016, and we're pretty high. Bloomfield Township has a very high rate of absentee voters, even though we're smaller than some of the larger communities. So that's more that we're doing in that room than we've ever done before in a presidential primary. You know, I don't know how long it's going to take us today. I gave them a goal of, you know, how they had to work at those tables, because it's opening the ballots that takes all the time to get them out of the envelopes and separating them and then giving them to the, if you have the tabulators there or you have a high speed, the manual labor of preparing the ballots to be scanned, that's what takes all the time. And that is an uphill battle, because I don't know that with the increased amount of people requesting absentee ballots, I don't think you can feasibly do it in a 10 or 12 hour day anymore.
What's your best guess about when election results might be ready from Bloomfield Township?
Well, I'm hoping after 9 and maybe today closer to 10, but we'll have results. The polls will come in immediately at 8 o'clock, okay? All of our tabulators have a modem transmission to Oakland County, and those results at the polls will come in immediately. It's the absentees that you probably won't get till after 9. And I hope that we're going to see some legislation before the August election that we can process, open the ballots, take them out of their envelopes, leave them in the secrecy sleeves on Monday, and then process them on Tuesday. That'll make such a difference.
Jan Ronselli, thank you for your time, and good luck today.
Thank you for calling.
You may have been accustomed over your voting years to seeing retirees, older folks working the polling places. Seriously, where would we be without them? Well, this morning, I was surprised to see a couple of high schoolers helping voters. I decided to ask them what drew them to exercising this particular civic responsibility. I talked to Peyton Alexa, a high school senior, and Olivia Andrews Vaughn, a high school junior. We'll start with Peyton.
Why did you decide to work today?
I've decided to work because my mom is the deputy clerk of Ann Arbor. And I have helped since I've been 16, and she asked me to do it one time in the summer when I had time off and just to make some extra cash, and turned out to really like it.
What is the work like?
The work is pretty simple. It's not very complex. It's nice to see residents and everyone coming out to see new people. I meet people who've lived here. My grandparents live around here, so I meet people I know. And it's just great to work with everyone.
Sounds like you have a long day ahead of you.
I do. I have a 16-hour shift ahead of me.
What gets you through a day like that?
Lots of caffeine.
lots and lots of caffeine.
Would you say that you're someone who has an interest in civics and government, or just more interest in the community aspect of it?
I'm more interested in the community aspect. I have never really cared for government or anything like that in school, and I more like helping out. It just makes me feel better about myself.
How have the lines been today?
In the morning, we probably about had 30 people line up. Like, as soon as we opened the door, it was pretty intense. Like, and then after a while, it cooled down, and now we probably about have 10 or so in line at a time. It's pretty good.
That before work crowd.
Yes, yes. In the morning, everyone's trying to get to work and get their ballot in time so they don't have to come out later.
Are you expecting a big crowd in the afternoon hours?
They actually didn't know because of how many absentee ballots that people came in. So we're probably hoping about 300, maybe 4.
Do you mind saying how much you make for working the polls?
I make $13 an hour.
That's a good day's work.
It's pretty good. I make more than my other job.
What is your other job?
I take care of senior residents in their homes that are unable to take care of themselves.
Was there anything I did not ask you that you wish more people knew about Election Day?
That it makes an impact. Like, people should really come vote. Like, some people don't think that one vote may make a difference, but it will. You'd be surprised.
Olivia, hi.
Hi.
Do you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Olivia. I'm a junior at Skyline High School.
Why did you decide to work the polls this year?
Well, my friend, she saw one of her teachers told her about the opportunity, and so she looked into it more, and then she told me, and I thought it would be a really great opportunity. I'm not old enough to vote yet, but I still wanted to have some kind of participation, so it was a really great opportunity.
So this isn't a class credit situation. This is just something you're doing for you.
Yeah. Well, I decided to do this even though, so this week I'm at Skyline and we're on trimesters and this is finals week. So I actually have finals tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. But I decided to do this anyway because I just think that it's like really important and it's a really great experience.
What's it been like so far today?
Well, it was pretty busy right first off in the morning, and there have been a couple little hiccups with, like, absentee ballots and stuff like that because some of the things have changed from last year on procedures. But other than that, it's been pretty smooth going, and everybody's been really nice.
Have a lot of people turned up to vote?
Yeah, we've had really good numbers. Earlier I kept calculating, like, percentages of, like, people from this precinct and, like, how many we had so far. And when I was doing it first thing in the morning, we were up to, like, 10% already. So,
is it hard work?
No, it's not hard. We all switch off on different jobs. And it's good that there's 5 of us, so we each have small jobs with each person that goes through. If there were less of us, then it would become more difficult, especially with the longer lines. But so far it hasn't been hard.
Have people been pretty patient?
Yeah, we've had a couple people that have been less patient than others, but overall most people have been really patient.
People hearing this might wonder why someone who is not yet old enough to vote herself might want to be part of this whole thing. How do you answer that question?
Well, because I am not able to vote yet, I don't really have a way to participate in the elections, but I still like doing a lot with it. I've done a lot of research on the candidates, and I've definitely made my own decisions about who I like better. But since I am not yet able to vote, I thought this would be a good way to still be involved.
What is your day going to look like today?
Well, I woke up at 5 in the morning. And I drove over here, and we started setting up at 6, and then at 7 we opened. So the lines started, and it was pretty busy right at first, but ever since then it's been a little bit in and out, and the lines haven't been too bad. I'm going to be here for a little while, and then we get a lunch break and a dinner break, and then we close the polls at 8, but then we have to deconstruct everything, so I'll probably be here until about 10.
Do you think you would do this again?
Yeah, I like it, and all the people are really cool, and it's a really great way to get a different perspective on how the vote counts work.
Olivia, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
I'm April Baer. That's our show for today. Join us tomorrow for election results and so much more. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Wednesday.